The next case is 98-1020 Jackson Package versus American Medical Technology.
Whether or not the company is entitled to recover, not what the trial court decides. There's some information that the plaintiff here didn't object to some of the conduct, some of the more childish or obnoxious kind of conduct that we read about. But the question I have is, you think you have a Greeley claim that's grounded on the proposition that one open court, one has a right to, one shouldn't be punished for bringing a claim, a legal claim, on the Dow Corning business. So it seemed to me that the arguments were that really was what amounted, that was the underpinnings, the Greeley claim was underpinnings for your client's claim of constructive discharge, that it wasn't so much the sexual comments, it was, I was let go because I mean, my duties were sufficiently diminished that I didn't like it there, or I know that's not sufficient, but she left because the job no longer was a good job. It sounded from the briefs that many of these incidents, your client testified that she didn't, really didn't offend her that much. I thought that's what I read in the brief.
Well, she testified that she owned her job. The thing in the beginning, after she began working for him, she just knew. Mm-hmm. And later, as they became more intense and more
but important, I guess important to the legal analysis here is it sounded to me that your client did not take the position that was the basis for her claiming constructive discharge. You think that, okay, I'm reading it wrong because I was mixing the Greeley claim based on open courts, which we could talk about separately, because that's essentially guarantees due process. But your client is saying this Greeley claim is something else. I thought that was essentially the basis for the real basis for the constructive discharge. These are being sort of mixed together, the intimidation by the sexual comments and the Greeley claim about the Dow Corning lawsuit. I think we really need to to discern what, from a legal analysis for this summary judgment, which is the key here. Is it a combination? What is it?
If we want to separate what we would consider to be the actual harassment from the retaliation that we have in the office, what we differentiate from the retaliation that we have, the sexual harassment stuff, the things that you did here, with the figure on the end, spreading the side, the hand on the shoulder,
we normally think of sexual harassment in terms of someone demanding sexual favors and refusing and being fired for that. That's why I say kind of mixing these, but you're saying all this, the Dow Corning business caused changes in her duties, which amounts to sufficient for a constructive discharge claim.
I understand the importance from your standpoint and the bar's standpoint of trying to establish a public policy argument on Article 1, Section 16, the right to remedy clause. My question is, why isn't this case, and I don't see it cited here any place, closer to Kern versus Further Paint than it is to establish another public policy exception?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what this is?
It is not, Your Honor. In this case, it's founded on Mrs. Pettis' lawsuit against California. Mrs.
Pettis
filed,
you don't have to. I understand. You're saying that she was fired because she had this cause of action against Dow Chemical. But all of the facts that you've set forth and repeated here this morning has been the sexual harassment indicia, have they not?
They have, sir.
Then why did, how do you distinguish it from Kearns then?
I don't. I think Kearns is appropriate for the sexual harassment indicia, in terms of they actually should have been entitled to have a claim for the jury on the sexual harassment.
But Kearns isn't even cited, is it?
We did not find a common law cause of action for sexual harassment. We filed for sexual harassment under 2112-99. And we did not pursue the common law claim specifically. It would be another claim that we have to stand whether the of the 2112-99. We did have a sexual harassment under the claim indicating this was not founded on the public policy. The public policy claim that we pursued is founded on
Kearns was an alleged
workers' compensation case. Was it also a 4112 case? Well, if you don't know, that's fine. Allegations are true as we must for the procedural aspect of this case. You can't really believe that a woman should have to stay employed under these circumstances, do you? Constructively discharged. Well, she has to, for this type of suit to be impacted, she has to quit. Well, she didn't quit. So the issue becomes constructive discharge. Okay. Now, do you really think that under the circumstances that we're faced with in this case, that any person should have to stay employed with that kind of activity going on? Or is it constructive discharge? So in other words, if my landlord doesn't provide water and heat for me, I move out, I've terminated the lease, right? That's a constructive eviction.
I wouldn't agree with your premise on that.
Okay.
And with respect to the not know that she was working for a long time at Harvard College until the case was filed. His decision for the case certainly was in the fact that she had filed a suit because she should have access to confidential information in the case file regarding drugs and plants when she, in fact, had her own cause of action.
Could not restrict the speech rights of an employee.
No. If the free speech rights of an employee were restricted by this private employer, that would not be allowed to speak in cause of action, because free speech rights written in our Constitution and the federal Constitution are meant to inhibit the government. That's to protect us from the government.
Okay, well, you indicated that it would impact it, and that's a clear constitutional right. Now, you're saying that a private employee has no constitutional right vis-a-vis his employer, okay?
Vis-a-vis his private employer, that's accurate. It's incorporated within the statute.
Do we allow an employer to fire an employee?
No. Because the legislature has said we can't do that. Every employer, for every whenever he doesn't like what's done to him, he's going to work on his constitutional rights to be violated, and he's going to be deported. And if you look at the state report, the state decisions that we sought, you will see that is one of their primary concerns, that do not apply constitutional rights to give the private employer outcome, simply be able to court creation. I'm in the sexual harassment aspect of the case.
You win on that for what reason?
I think it's a court of appeal.
That
12 pages, giving a very careful analysis of the Supreme Court's decision in inheritance of why this was possible firing. Inheritance is already established in the law. The Supreme Court inheritance established in the law as to what is the opposite firing. And what a court has to do, I don't know if I'm going to do it, but to go through item by item, 13 items, and say, these 13 items show me plain that the trial is not law. And if you particularly look at Court of Appeals' discussion on the 4th and 5th items, they're talking about the nature of the workplace. A workplace that is devoted to the enhancement of physical appearance. And they talk about the byplay and manual in the workplace. So I think they've done as much as you can on their hands.
I'm going to back to that, but really they're looking at whether or not the trial court used the discretion of that.
No, I think the Court of Appeals specifically felt they were doing a de novo review. And so they didn't, that wasn't the use of discretion. They did their own analysis. Frankly, it was much more detailed and specific, both with respect to individual instances and with respect to the totality. So, no, I don't believe.
Yeah, okay, so we can disregard what the trial court said, which seems to me the very trouble. The folks that have kept low life intimidating, they have to be playing a complaint with us.
Thank you.
council court goes on to say, by its word, in fact, that the public policy exception based on here, I think, the council court makes the point I've been making, that is, if you incorporate open court as part of the public policy at the board, then you in fact are opening the gate for other forms of constitutional guarantees being enforced against private courts. And the Supreme Court is comfortable with that. Footnote 13 explains just how that works, just like it does today in public. Because public employees do have constitutional rights they can enforce against public employers. But once again, what you're doing then by that decision, and the federal courts is either guaranteeing that what you're doing by that decision is you are effectively creating a super section 1983 and try to comply with the you are effectively swallowing the capital exception. So,
Ms. Willis, you said about a little less than 2 minutes of your time.
Very quickly. With regards to the discharge of the atmosphere was the intended work. The office manager herself testified that she could understand, given what was going on, that people were really trying to get rid of this pandemic. That's the office manager. With regard to whether she was playing, they had it from the United States of America, which is the district of New York, Florida. The term is pretty clear, they said. They're not required to have any, they don't complain. We do, in this case, have multiple sources of public health, and we do not rely entirely on the open court provision. Our multiple sources include the public health of the annual outside liability statute. It would help you to deter the bachelor from selling the second product and public injury to our people. And this is tactics of furthering that policy, which you want to make any of that.
You have to use your time.
Thank you.
The case is submitted to be advised for opinion. Next case is 98.